I'd like to call to order the Personnel Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting, January 9, 2018, 6:30 p.m. We got the notification of Open Meetings Act posted back. Announcement of the procedures of tonight's meeting. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, I've already indicated that. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. Oh, yeah. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Roll call.
Fowler.
Here.
Brunwald. Leahy. Jeff.
Here.
Fred Thompson.
Here. John, would you replace Patrick Leahy?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
John
Thompson. Yes.
Okay. Item number four. Adoption of agenda.
The move.
A motion. Second.
Second.
Second. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We have publication of tonight's meeting part of the public record. Item number six, review and recommendation on 2018 affirmative action policy, Tracy Thompson and Kelly. What was your last name?
Lorance.
Lorance. From Bear Home.
Good evening, board. I'm Tracy Thompson, district secretary and HR assistant for the district. Part of my HR responsibilities include affirmative action. Kelly Lorance is our legal counsel from Bear Home. For your consideration tonight is the review and recommendation of the 2018 affirmative action policy. The 2018 Affirmative Action Policy has two housekeeping changes to remain compliant with federal guidelines. Otherwise, it remains approved. It remains as it was approved in 2017. So these changes refer to the tracking of veterans' employment, promotion, and training opportunities, and updated benchmarks for veterans' hiring. The memo is a year-end review of all the compliance actions that were taken in 2017. I'll just highlight those actions. The first thing we did was the subcontractor and suppliers memorandum. We mailed that in May of 2017. We mailed this to all vendors that do business with the district, informing them of our non-discrimination policy, and they also have a non-discrimination policy. Our posters are all up to date in all district offices that talk about equal opportunity. We send a letter semi-annually to management regarding affirmative action obligations so that they're all aware of what our policy is. We continue to advertise all our position openings in Nebraska Workforce, the Voc Rehab Office, the Omaha World Herald, or whatever local paper, where, such as in Blair, we advertised in the Blair paper for the water operator this year. And then our Vets 4212 employment report was also filed. We had a rather busy year for employment. We had four full-time job openings that were filled, and then we also had our seasonal and part-time people as well. Basically, that is our report for 2017. If you have any questions, I will defer to Kelly. Otherwise, your recommendation and review tonight is to put the amendments into our affirmative action policy for 2018, that if they be adopted and incorporated into the district policy manual as you did.
Can we have a motion?
A motion for staff recommendation.
That motion. Second. Second. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this item? Directors?
I have a question. Is there any substantial changes from this as to what it was in prior times?
No. Other than the two
and that's pretty much as was.
Director Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, do we have any veterans preference hiring?
We did have veterans apply. As far as preference?
Yes, preference.
Jobs are filled by managers based on qualifications.
Well, I will say that the veteran hiring numbers were quite high, and they met the benchmarks that were required of it, which is actually unusual for any federal contractor, frankly.
Okay, but part of what I'm getting at, you had two people applying. Both of them were very well qualified, about even, but then there's a veteran or a disabled veteran. That veteran or disabled veteran get preference in that case? That's what I was asking.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Item number seven, review recommendation to introduce legislation in 2019 Nebraska legislative session to extend the PEP and RD general obligation bonding authority to the year 2029.
Long agenda item. As most of you know, in 2009, after a seven-year effort, the district was granted bonding authority by the legislature. It was a unanimous vote, and it was signed by the governor. As a result of LB 160, the following statutes were adopted to put that LB 160 into law. I did list in the memo the projects that were completed with bonding funds. And as you can see, there are both levees, there are reservoirs, there are water quality basins. They were larger projects that needed a big infusion of capital to get them built and underway. Some notes, obviously Western Sarpy Clear Creek, that levee system protects 51% of the state's water supply, both the MUD and the Lincoln Wellfields. Also, Dam Site 15, A and the Prairie Crean Reservoir, those all contributed to the ability to redo the hydrology throughout the watershed and the improvement that occurred by taking or preventing 3,000 structures from going into the floodplain. And then also Cramper Lake, Danish Shouts Rec area, so it wasn't just urban areas, it was obviously we built it in the rural area up in Dakota County. You're all familiar with that project. Also, the Waterloo levee, that was at a time when Waterloo had to improve their levee. Without our contributions, I don't know if that project would have occurred, and Waterloo now would be in a floodplain. And so one that would eliminated the development in the community, basically, and then they all have been required to purchase flood insurance if they did have a loan. So that was a big boost to that small town in western Douglas County. I put some historical information on the district's bond issues and our outstanding debt. As you know, we refinanced the bonds and we saved about $3.6 million over the last few years. One of the items of note that when the bill was introduced, we had a number of folks indicate that the mill levy would go through the roof and that taxes would be out of control. As you can see, from 2008, when bonding authority was granted, to 2018, the mill levy actually decreased. Also, during that time, I believe in 2010, 2011, state aid to NRDs was eliminated, and that was roughly $400,000 to $500,000 a year for the PAPIA. So not only did we eliminate state aid and also implement bonding authority, but we continued to lower our mill levy. So we've got a very good track record of the board does of spending these funds wisely and using them sparingly only when projects were needed. Again, this is a bonding is basically considered a financing tool. The way the current statute is written, it takes 8 votes of the 11 to approve any bond issue. The current authority expires in December 31st of 2019. We would not introduce a bill this session because this is the last of the biennium session, so any bill that doesn't get approved will die, and then it will have to be reintroduced next year. So the best strategy or best idea would be to introduce it in January of 19, and that's a long session as well, so it gives you longer to go through the process. Just some suggestions, and just from a purely, I guess, educated guess on how the legislature works. It's a very tough environment, obviously, with property taxes and funding and all those sorts of things going on. So the sooner you start, the better. That's why we're bringing this up in January of this year instead of January of 19. And this is it took us 7 years to get it in the first place. It's going to take us a couple years to work on it to get it extended, if that's what the board wants to do. This would be very difficult if you let it expire to come back at a later date, 2-3 years down the road, and try to get it reintroduced and get it approved. It will be a much easier lift if you go ahead and try to get it extended before it expires. If it does expire, it makes it that much more difficult. I'm not saying it will be easy to get it extended. It may be different. As it goes through the legislative process, which they call the sausage-making process, it may be different than what it looks now, but that will all be subject to the senator that introduces it, and then also the just the legislative process of give and take. So it could be totally different. We have a senator that will introduce it. All the senators that we've talked to in our meetings from our district, we've indicated that this could be a possibility. And we did not have one that had a serious issue with bringing this back up before the legislature. Doesn't mean it's going to pass, but again, we didn't see anybody that just absolutely opposed it from our conversation. So happy to answer any questions or any comments. We'll leave it at that.
We have a staff. We have a recommendation on this issue.
Yeah, we have a recommendation to seek the extension of the authority till 2029.
Before we start any director discussion, can we have whether we want to move forward?
I'll approve staff recommendation.
Second.
A second. Anyone in the public who wishes to discuss this item? Directors? Director Donnelly?
Mr. Winkler, there are some concerns about the weather Thursday night, and several of us are likely not to make that meeting if the forecast holds up. What would your opinion be if we were to table it tonight and hold it off 30 days?
I can't predict the weather. I don't know what the roads will be like at 6:30 on Thursday. So I would suggest that we move forward until otherwise. If it becomes that we don't have a quorum or we need additional directors here, you can always table it Thursday. This is a recommendation to the board, so tabling it now really has no effect.
Thank you.
Any other directors?
What is the net effect as far as it doesn't increase bonding authority, keeps it as it is, and up to a limit of?
Up to a limit of 1 cent of your valuation, and then if you want to go above that 1 cent, you have to get a vote of the.
This issue is particular to all NRDs within the
no,
or just this one.
Just this one. There is a bill, I guess, still out there. It didn't make it in the legislature as far as the full vote. It came up short, but it's still viable. But I don't think it'll be acted on. That included all NRDs. The other NRDs have been, I would say, maybe lukewarm to wanting bonding authority. And they're pretty much in a big fight right now for the 3 cent additional for over-appropriated and fully appropriated basins. And so I think that's their focus. And they definitely will expend a lot of political capital to get that passed. And I just have a feeling, if I was in their position, I would not want to put up another fight for something else the next year. So I'm guessing we are on our own, although the NARD will support us and the other districts will support us because it is written in NARD policy that any district that seeks bonding authority has the support of all of the NRDs. And so they will support it, but they might not want it. But the option would be if they did, they could potentially hook on, but I just don't see them doing that. I see that this is on our own again.
Yeah.
Thank you. I certainly endorse this recommendation. It's permissive legislation, and we can't go on beyond what we need for our NRD because the bill that was passed said about our bonding authority. And John's right, there is definitely talk about expanding this all NRDs. When we present this to for potential legislative action, I got a feeling it's going to be converted to, well, let's just give all NRDs bonding authority. Whether they like it or not remains to be seen, and it's going to be interesting. But being on the Natural Resource Commission, all these projects have to put 40% of your own money up. The smaller NRDs don't have the budgets we have, and bonding authority for those would be a good thing to have to complete some significant projects they have. But our recommendation is only good for the Papio, but I suspect that once it's picked, assuming it's Senator picks it up and runs with it, it'll probably be not just for us, but for all. As you can see, we didn't raise the mill levy. Other NRDs, it'd be permissive anyway, facing tax cuts, property cuts. There's all sorts of innuendos that people throw out, but I think it's a good thing to get projects done as we've shown ourselves.
How much per year are we spending to pay down the debt?
Our current debt service payment is $4.3 million.
Per year?
Per year.
For how long?
I believe we have until 2020. Or no, it'd be longer than that after refinancing. Carrie, do you know off the top of your head? What's that? Yeah, 2030. 2030, that's great. So you're looking at, by the time it's expired, 10 more years. If it's allowed to. 4.3. And right now we utilize 0.7 cents of the 1 cent. So we've got three-tenths or cent, which currently we could, if the board needed to, bond 15 to 20 million additional, roughly, if we had a project that needed it to be done. We could do that up until it expires or when it's extended. Now, it doesn't mean when this passes you get an additional cent. It's just the authority continues with the current situation you have. So don't be confused that we'll get more. We'll only get what we have now.
I guess just to be clear on the process, you have to have it's an act of the legislature that we have to go through in order to extend this.
Mm-hmm.
It's significantly more difficult to get a new bonding issue than it would be to extend this. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
You still have to go through the entire legislature. I guess I can see where you've done some good projects with this. I always have a problem with debt because we're swimming in debt. We're paying $4.3 million every single year to service this debt. And I hate to see us pile.
And because you have it, you still have to vote to use it. So because it passes doesn't mean it you will acquire any more debt. It just means you have the option to.
It's a tool.
It's a financing tool. It's correct. Yeah. And we are one of the few government entities that do not have it. Community colleges, for crying out loud, have it. But, and they use it wisely, I guess. Metro, use it wisely, Fred?
They use it. Director Brady?
Thank you. Well, the community colleges, just to touch on that, Southeast Community College trying to get a bond passed. The last election cycle and former governor and Nebraska Cattlemen's Group, you just piled on and wouldn't allow them to do it. They lost that bonding authority, so it's tough out there politically and certainly in the state of Nebraska to get that. But I was wondering if one of the stipulations, if I can be educated on this, if this bonding authority did not pass, or as it stands now, there's a stipulation that we cannot have do any projects in Washington County or Burke County as long as the bonding authority is in place.
Some of the stipulations that protect some of the areas of the district that wouldn't favor projects are, one, you can't use bonding money to build a project over 400 surface acres, and that was in response to the fears that 1 and 3C would get built. In addition, if a project is in the exclusive zoning jurisdiction of a county, say Washington County, they would if you're using bond funds only, if you're using bond funds to finance a project, then the county board could pass a resolution that does not allow basically vetoes your project.
Okay.
Now, those are stipulations that are nowhere else in state statute that are these. So, for example, county can't veto a city project or school district project or anybody else, but due to the fact when we were negotiating this to answer the critics and the fears of the critics, those stipulations were put in there to put further restrictions and further leashes on the ability to fund projects. So.
Well, what I'm saying is if we, one of the, you know, if this bonding authority would not pass or extend it by this board, then there may be a possibility to create a project in Washington County greater than 400.
You can do that now if you do not use bond funds.
Correct.
Yep.
Now, but as director, I'm just going to put it out there that I am a poor candidate.
Any other questions?
I'll just throw out for the sake of, I've gotten to get on my soapbox about this for a while, but I'll be very brief. I appreciate Director Gaff's comments, and I would be just as happy to see the sunsetted next year. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I share Director Conley's concerns about this, the weather, and I have a situation where I may not be able to drive because of some medication I'll be taking. But there would be nothing to preclude this from coming back on the agenda next month that we could ask for reconsideration if it were not to pass. Am I correct?
That's correct, yeah.
That goes through with any agenda item for Thursday.
Well, sure. I'm just kind of reiterating what I know. I just...
emergency meeting next week if we need to.
Yeah, if the conditions are bad enough, we'll obviously cancel the meeting. We've already made plans to just reschedule it for next Thursday. So, Marlon, did you?
I wanted to know, and I just noticed it here. The agenda says that extending it through 2029, and that's, you know, the motion doesn't actually end up saying that. Just wondering if you want to put the word in the to December 31st, 2029.
Instead of 2019.
No, 2019 stays, that's sunset. Just add from 2019 to December 31st.
Yeah. We left it like that because, I mean, it could be 5 years, it could be three. Okay. It just depends on
forever.
You want to leave it
like? Yeah, we have to. Because it depends on what the introducer will think that the legislature can take. So, but yeah, we didn't.
Any other questions from the director? Roll call.
Albert.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Aye. That concludes the Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee. Thank you.
Are you ready to move ahead with the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee?
Yes.
I'm calling the meeting to order. A copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted at the rear of the room and in the hallway. With that, Fred Conley has indicated that he may need to leave before this meeting is over, and if so, I'll ask Tim Fowler to step in if in fact he leaves.
Okay.
You don't have to leave me, Tim.
With that form, please. Fred Conley.
Here.
Leahy. Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Fowler.
Yes. Here.
Yes. I failed to recognize that Director Leahy wasn't there when I asked for Director Fowler to fill in for Fred if he leaves, and we'll worry about that if it happens. Adoption agenda, please.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Greg Conley?
Here. Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Kinzer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. I have here an affidavit of publication of the meeting notice for tonight, and that'll become part of the permanent records. And now moving ahead to item six is a review and recommendation on the Platte River Trail Phase One. This is a MOPAT Trail Project Professional Service Contract. It's a closeout. Eric Williams and Dan Dolezal, Earhart Griffin Associates. Good evening.
Good evening, directors. So to be clear, this is a section of the MOPAT Trail from Highway 50, just north of the Platte River, along the south side of Highway 31 over to the Lead Bridge. It's about 4 miles long. We've talked about this a number of times over the last several years. The project has gone on for something like 10 years in total, but it's been completed since July of 2014 and open for use by the public. And so at this point, we'd like to resolve some of the final closeout issues that we've been working with Earhart Griffin to get finalized with the State of Nebraska Department of Transportation. We've submitted, if you scroll down there, Mike, let's see, maybe we can start at the back, actually, the letter from Earhart Griffin. There you go. Okay. So this letter from Earhart Griffin gives kind of a good idea of some of the steps that we've gone through, and it starts in the upper left. You can see that the letter was included the CWO, or the consultant work order, that EGA had submitted to the district, that we had reviewed, discussed some of the finer points with EGA, and then sent on to the Nebraska Department of Roads at the time, now Nebraska Department of Transportation, and recommended that they approve those costs and change the contract with EGA so that additional funds could be reimbursed based on work that was completed towards the project. There were a few of these different CWOs approved throughout the course of the project, and the items listed here, in summary, our CWO consists of, there are five different items listed. This highlights different work that was completed by EGA during construction of the trail, based on a changing of the timeline for the contractor to be working on site, which required additional work by the consultant for overseeing that. A refiling of the 404 permit, which required, again, a shifting of some of the work that EGA was doing relative to the contractor. Additional working days, point number three there, that were given to the contractor, but then not credited to the engineer to oversee the contractor on the site. Some observation reporting for the NPDES permit. And then lastly, the mileage in the original contract was written, listed in trips rather than listed in miles. And if you multiply it out, it comes to a not insignificant difference in the total reimbursement that they were eligible to file, because 370 is quite a bit different than the estimated 10,000 miles that should have been reported. So those five items were included in a CWO, submitted to the district, and then submitted to Nebraska Department of Transportation. And in the end, after multiple years of discussion about this, actually, and several iterations, the final conclusion from the Department of Transportation was that these costs were not eligible because the work had been completed prior to the CWO being approved. So essentially, you cannot request a CWO if the work has already been completed. And then we never really got a clear answer why they didn't approve the mileage. That was not work that was completed. That was a contract error. But in the end, NDOT's conclusion was that they were not going to reimburse or approve the CWO for any portion of the work listed here for EGA to be compensated for work that had already been completed. Each time that CWO was submitted to us, we had reviewed it, talked with Dan, and indicated, yes, we agree these costs were reasonable, signed it, and sent it down to the state. And so all the way through, we had been reviewing this, and we felt that this was an appropriate change in the contract for services that were provided. So after the last letter, if you scroll up, Mike, there's a letter from Department of Transportation that highlights that they are not going, they do not feel that these are eligible for federal reimbursement. The bottom of the first paragraph is essentially what they're saying, that they will not be recommending this to FHWA for final approval. After that letter was received, we talked with EGA, and they submitted an invoice to us for those services. because the contract for the construction administration during the project actually being completed was between EGA and the district. 80% of that was reimbursed by Department of Transportation from federal funds, but the contract was still between these two agencies. And so if the services were not covered and not reimbursable from the state, EGA asked us to then pay those costs. We met with EGA one more time and ran back through some of the costs there that were listed in the CWO, recognizing that both parties had some responsibility. Dana highlighted, even on top of what was on the CWO, some additional work that they had completed relevant to filing the CWO and additional documentation in an attempt to get this concluded. But both parties felt that there was some shared responsibility in getting this concluded, and so we discussed and came to an agreement about what would be recommended as payment from the district to EGA for the services that they had previously completed for this project. And so in the end, we are recommending that we pay a closeout amount of $48,797.69, and this will essentially cover all of the services that were listed in that CWO that were deemed not federally reimbursable by NDOT, and then both parties understand that this will conclude the contract, and we will not be back for any more discussion on this project. After a very lengthy process, this will be the end of this project. So we're recommending that final payment from the district budget to the trails budget to EGA for their work. Yeah, the CWO... On the letter from EGA, it does list that the CWO was $65,489.15. So in that shared responsibility, EGA has indicated that they would be willing to accept that some portion of that is not going to be paid because, again, as the project went on, there was shared responsibility between the consultant and the NRD to get some of the work done, and we're both taking responsibility that they will accept lower payment than what was in the contract. And we will agree to pay the other portion so that we all get this wrapped up.
Well, Chair, I'd entertain a motion on this item.
Move with staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Teaser.
Yeah, Eric, there was comment, there was reference to these letters. How come these letters were not included in the and what we received prior to the meeting?
So the letter from EGA is an updated version, and in the upper left-hand corner.
I'm asking a question. How come we didn't receive that information in the packet that we received? You're making reference to this tonight. This is the first time I saw this, and there was reference made to this throughout. These two letters were not included in what was mailed to us earlier.
Is that correct? I'm sorry. I understood that everything that's on the screen was mailed or was emailed earlier.
There's a letter in the packet from Marlin and then the response from the state. It's
in
your packet.
I don't think the two letters were included.
They're right here.
Page 5, Michael.
There they are. There's one.
That's the final response from the state signed by the project manager. And there's the letter from EGA.
In fact, I made an inquiry on that.
I thought we included them.
Anyway, they are here tonight, okay, so we're going to address what they're presenting to us.
My concern would be that, and I expressed this at the exec committee, that I would feel better if this was a 50-50 split rather than, I think you said 75-25 was kind of determined that we would be responsible for 75. When you have these not succeed cost contracts and then all of a sudden I just get a bad feeling. And frankly, I can't support the proposal.
So the specific discussion, item number 5, is the mileage correction, and we felt that that was a quite obvious, just an error in reporting on the contracting, and so we agreed to pay the entire amount on item number 5 and number 4, which is the permit review, and again, we don't know why they didn't agree on that. And then we agreed to split 50-50 on items 1, 2, and 3, which is that shared responsibility for the 404 permit and the changes in working days that were not authorized. So it's 50-50 on those three items. And then the last two items, we agreed to take the full responsibility.
All right. I see another hand down there. Director Thompson.
Rich, I agree. The amount's not right. We should pay it all. If you look at Earhart Griffin's bill, May 19, 2017.
You're a big help.
And then you look at the letter December 8, 2017 from Nebraska Department of Transportation where they say up at top, good life, great journey. This has been anything but a great journey. You're talking about a trail that predates Eric Williams, and so I can blame some of this on Jerry Bowen, but he's not here. So I'm glad to see this finally coming to an end. It's been back and forth. I think it's ironic that the Department of Roads said, well, you can't get federal money when a significant portion of that was for a federal permit. You know, hey, it's Department of Roads. We're following the federal guidelines, but then you say you're not eligible for federal money. It just doesn't mean that we're off the hook from NRD money because the work, in fact, happened. Their statement that, oh, you didn't get approval. I want anyone to ask me which contract went on without the final rubber stamp from the board, pending, you know, our approval of it. All our contracts, basically. We continue in due diligence, so I think Eric Griffin has done, to get this thing complete, because there are some issues, especially with Department of Roads, because they weren't Department of Transportation back then, on declaring what we need and submitting that NPDS form. Is that the one I keep forgetting to... The road that Nebraska uses, or NPDS form. I think it's atrocious that Department of Roads, Department of Transportation said, yeah, this guy had done the contract, did a great job on it, and now we're just going to be picky since they approved some of it and then didn't approve it now. And so we're bailing out. We got $78,000 in the budget for this. And so now I commend Eric Griffin for reducing it, but there's some shared responsibility, as Eric mentioned. We should have said, stop, don't do a darn thing. But have we ever done that with any contractor? No, we're going to continue because we got to get these projects done. And otherwise, we'd be up to our neck in change orders all day long. But I guess I'm okay since staff negotiated with this. For the $65,000 amount, 48 should be 65, but I think just splitting it because they incurred the cost, and a lot to blame with Dunn and Lincoln. I definitely we should get this closed out.
Other directors, Director Bradley,
thank you, and forgive my ignorance on this. I think Director Thompson touched on this, but how the state Department of Roads or NDOT determines federal requirements is that, you know, Constitution. They do that and get away with it in this case.
That process has since changed slightly to leave more responsibility with the state to avoid that state versus federal process. So I think they agreed that the multiple reviews by state and federal agencies is not the most streamlined version. And we'll have a different process in the future.
Unfortunately, this project was thrown right in the middle of a turf war between Federal Highway Administration and Nebraska Department of Roads. And projects all over the state suffered the same fate. Kearney specifically, I think they had an $11 million exchange that ended up into about a $53 million exchange because of time delays and caught in that process. So this was small potatoes compared to talking to the mayor of Kearney, but it was two agencies that were trying to stake out who was, I guess, the big dog in the neighborhood. And unfortunately, Earhart Griffin and this project, and we got caught in the middle. Quite frankly, this problem belongs right at the feet of the Department of Transportation, and we're here to clean up their mess.
If the directors, if you wouldn't mind me just saying something, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, please go ahead.
I appreciate your comments. Stan Dolezal with Earhart Griffin. I would like the directors to rest assured that we started this process in advance of that expenditure. My first CWO that you'll see on the top of the letter, I kept those dates intentionally, but on October 12th of 2014, I approached the NDR and I said, I'm estimating that I'm going to be $70,000 short due to a number of reasons. They rejected me at that point. And then we did the resubmittals that you see in 14 and 15. And in each time, that amount went from 70,000 to the actual of the 65,000. And another point I'd like to make is that I've got about $7,000 of time spent dealing with this that I've never invoiced that we're eating. And due to the audit that they had us do on our rates, because we submit our overhead rates and our profit rates, and they review that, there's another $12,000 that technically could be applied to this bill that would be, because we're using 2011 rates, 2014, 2015, those rates were never changed. And we're willing to walk away from that as well. So Rich, when you talk about half and half, there's probably another $19,000 that isn't showing up that we're walking away from, just to make you feel better about what you're doing.
And realistically, when you're dealing with an agency, you can't just say, even though we haven't got a signature on the line, we're going to shut the job down. That incurs all sorts of additional costs for delays and contractor expense and so forth. So it's rather idealistic to think you can just chop it off and say, we'll get back together when we get somebody to sign the piece of paper. That just does not happen in the real world. And even though I'm not happy to see the extra cost, I think they're warranted in this case. And I certainly intend to support this item. Director Teaser.
I'll take exception with staff on this. This may have been added to the website. There is absolutely nothing here on this letter that was sent out on the Friday that Dean sent that. And there's two letters that are missing. That really ticks me off, guys. We need complete information. I don't like this stuff where we only get a little bit of. You got it, you send it, so we can review it. And I am pointing at you, Eric. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be distasteful, but it really does bother me.
Okay, any other questions or comments?
I found it on the website.
Well, it was added later. That's my point.
John Lees?
You know, I'm listening to everything here, but I don't understand why. Did we try to visit with the DOT just to sit down and maybe try to just talk to them and say, hey, what's going on here? Why does the buck always stop here? If I don't understand that, maybe we could get some common cooperation, that whether it was a mistake or something happened for whatever reason, you know, somebody needs to step up a bit and say, okay, yeah, we screwed up. But I guess my point is, I would rather see the DOT step up and help us clean this up.
We spent 3 years working with the DOT. I've met with two different directors personally. And the last letter we got was basically not only no, hell no. And we sent a response letter that we still don't have a response.
Really?
So the director has said they are done with this issue. They will not accept any letters. They will not accept any phone call. They are done with this issue. And so I've had two directors. I've had our government relations people contact the directors. We've met with several staff members, assistant directors, staff-level DOT people. And again, no. And that answer will not change no matter how many times I talk to the director.
And never gave us an explanation as to why.
They're done. The letter was very straightforward and said, we're done.
Okay.
We have a motion on the floor. Roll call on the motion, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Caesar?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. Now moving ahead to the next item is the got to find the agenda. Must be Paul Woodward. Okay. This review and recommendation on the amendment to the JEO Consulting Group Professional Services Agreement for the independent external peer review of Missouri River R613 and R616 levy accreditation project. Paul Woodward and Dan Fricke with JEO.
Good evening. Thank you. We do have before you an amendment to JEO's Professional Services Agreement. This work is required as part of the Section 408 approval process through the Corps of Engineers to modify the federal levies R613, R616 south of Bellevue. Basically, in that process, the Corps has their review team as part of their staff, the district staff. They're called the Agency Technical Review Team. And then, in addition to that, they require an independent review. So JEO is performing those tasks. So far to date, they've spent around $195,000 of $207,000 and actually completed the scope that was provided for that dollars with even some addition. So they originally thought they would just do three separate reviews as part of that. We've actually had a fourth post 100% review, and we're at the point now where we actually have one more submittal into the Corps, so this is timely that we need to review that submittal through the IEPR process before this can get sent from district up to division. So that's kind of where it's at. We would need, with just $12,000 left in the contract, we would need more than that to perform the rest of the work. Dan's looked at that and estimated it'd take about another $69,000 plus to do that. So the new contract price would be $277,374. At the bottom of the memo there is kind of the bigger numbers of the total project. And I don't want to throw you off guard here too much, but you see it in JEO's line there, the 195 plus the 82 would be what they're going to do under this contract amendment. There's probably additional work required by them during construction. And 30 submittals by a contractor would not only need to be reviewed by FIRA as the engineer of record on the plans, but also by JEO to make sure that the processes are being followed with what was carried out. And this is really there for the safety of the project to look at those aspects. So what we're approving right now is that we'll go through that second future expenses already contracted, but just wanted you to be aware that there's additional fees coming up as part of this project that we'll have to be looking at as well by the time we get to the finish line, wherever that might be.
I move the staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson.
I haven't seen a memo like this with a chart, I don't think, ever. So thank you for providing that, because then future dates, you can't say you didn't want us.
Right.
You know, but I know that's probably not why you did it, but I think that puts in perspective that, was this in the original contract? Well, yeah, it was. Remember back in January we said it's going to cost us this more for different phases. So that's important to me, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, one of the reasons this was more of a, I think, personal issue that we wanted to show is that this federal process is an absolute nightmare, and it does not belong in local flood control. And that's why we've been trying to get language in the Senate and the House to get it removed. But this is an 8-year process for a permit, and we will spend $6.2 million for a permit that the design hasn't changed that much from the beginning to when it's 100% approved. And I've met with four different colonels on this project, and I've met with the several brigadier generals in Washington, D.C. And it's still 8 years and $6 million. No doubt this project in that 8 years has gone from whatever the original estimate, $25 million, to whatever it will be to construct. And so this is just an absolute nightmare. And I've had a conversation. In fact, I talked to Senator Fisher today. She's going to have the Corps in front of her committee next week. And she wanted some specific examples of what that 408 process is. Well, I sent her the memo. I sent her this memo, and I said, just ask them about this. And they're actually doing us a favor by just sending it to division, allegedly, and sending it right back to district for the permit and not going to headquarters. Or it would add several hundred more thousand onto it. So I just wanted the board, as elected officials, to be aware that this is the kind of overburdensome type of regulation that had zero impact on the safety of our citizens or the protection of that base or that infrastructure. All it did was cost millions and millions and millions of dollars for, in my opinion, zero. So,
thank you.
How do we get rid of it?
We've joined a coalition of different levy districts throughout the country. There's 10 states involved now. We actually have some language in the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate to remove the requirement from local flood control projects. And so what it does is say the Corps cannot apply this permit to any local flood control project that has a local sponsor, would be like the NRD or the state. In fact, there are over, I think, the last count, just in California, in Los Angeles County alone, there are 300 408 permits awaiting approval in one county. And so they're hearing this from New York to California, that this process is just unwieldy, it's unruly, it adds no value, and they're trying to get rid of it. And so we've had the conversation in D.C. with core people and saying this is not working. And so hopefully the Senate will pick that up, which I think they will. Joni Ernst is very involved, as well as senators from Louisiana and the southern states. And they're going to try to eliminate that requirement. So we've been very active, and it continues to go through the process. But we'll have our permit before this gets done. But hopefully anytime in the future, we can eliminate it. So
a lot of money, isn't it? Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Craig Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chair
Christine? Yes. Now we're moving ahead to maybe a little more pleasant subject. Review and recommendation on groundwater monitoring joint funding agreement with USGS. Paul Woodward and Amanda Flynn, please.
Good evening. Amanda's going to go through a presentation here real quick just to outline what it is that we're doing. We're back here today because our 4 years of monitoring that we have done, that agreement actually ends here in March. So we'll look to begin this new agreement, which will last for a period from this March till March of 2021, correct? 2022. So it actually covers 4 years of actual monitoring with the additional time to complete some of the lab results and the tests and some of the reporting and stuff like that. So with that, I'll let Amanda go through the rest of what we're doing, and we'll answer questions after that.
All right. As Paul said, I'm Amanda Flynn, and I'm with the USGS Nebraska Water Science Center. The first thing I'm going to do is go over what we did from 2014 through 2017, and then we'll go into the plan for 2018 through 2021. So the USGS, the most recent sampling agreement with the USGS covered 2014 through 2017, but the USGS has been collecting water quality samples to support the district's groundwater management plan since 1992. We started by categorizing groundwater chemistry in the area, and now we're focusing on monitoring the aquifers for selected analytes under Nebraska Title 118. And Nebraska Title 118 specifies drinking water limits for regulated contaminants. We also analyze samples for additional nutrients and pesticides that are not regulated, such as phosphate, metallochlor, simazine, and other pesticides. And then we also have established baseline water quality at newly established monitoring wells that have been installed in the past 2 years. We have two sets of wells that are screened that we sample. We have network wells and monitoring well clusters. The network wells are privately owned or municipally owned, so they are stock, irrigation, or domestic wells, and then the municipal wells operated by water entities. We also sample monitoring well clusters, which are owned by the district, and the monitoring well clusters consist of multiple wells at a single location, but are screened at differing depths at that location. sample collection at the monitoring well varies based on each cluster, but on average, the clusters are sampled about every 2 years. These are the aquifers within the NRD. I think you guys are mostly familiar with this at this point, but along the eastern side, we have the Missouri alluvial. The southern and southwestern purple area is the Platte and Elkhorn alluvial. The blue area is the upland aquifers, and then the stippled area is at depth, that's the Dakota aquifer. It's a sandstone bedrock aquifer that's sampled. During the 2014 to 17 period, we collected 223 samples at 131 sites across the district. That included 93 network well samples and 130 cluster well samples. The cluster wells can be split into two different groups. We have cluster wells that were installed in 1999, and we have 9 of those sets of cluster wells. They were installed to characterize the groundwater quality of the most utilized aquifers within the district. A majority of those cluster wells were installed in wellhead protection areas, and they are sampled every 2 to 4 years, with the exception of the Springfield, Tecama, and Venice clusters, which are sampled yearly to monitor contamination trends. The second set of cluster wells is the more most recently installed from 2015 through 2017. They were installed as part of an NET grant awarded to the district in 2014. They were installed to better understand the bedrock aquifers and to determine if they are viable sources of drinking water at depth. All are installed in wellhead protection areas and have been sampled semi-annually to characterize the water within the wellhead protection area. Based on the results we have this far, we do not see any nitrate issues, but we do see high metals are common in the deeper Dakota wells, and we also see high manganese in the valley wells, but that is common in alluvial sediments in this area. At the end of each sampling season, we provide the results to the district, to the landowners, and other interested parties. The results are also, the results are also published online through NWIS, which is USGS's National Water Information System. And it's a website that you can go to and pull up any water quality results that the USGS has collected. Lastly, the nutrient and pesticide information is released to the UNL Agrochemical Clearinghouse. The data in the clearinghouse is used by the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality to form the annual Nebraska Quality Monitoring Report. The report is prepared for the Nebraska legislator to keep them informed of groundwater quality conditions across the state, and it's required that each NRD provide the data that they've collected each year to be published within the within that report. Going forward, so that was the 2014 to 17 plan. So going forward, we're going to be discussing the 2018 to 21 plan. We're going to continue to monitor the aquifers on the 4-year rotation, starting this year with the Missouri aquifer, then the next year will be the Platte, followed by the upland, and then ending with the Dakota in 2021. We will collect 20 to 25 network samples in the designated aquifer each year, and we'll increase sampling in groundwater subareas of interest that have been defined as phase 2 under the updated groundwater management plan. We'll also continue to collect samples for the NRA project. Concerning the groundwater quality subareas, analysis of samples collected over time throughout the district have shown higher nitrate levels in 2 areas, one being in the Platte alluvial in south central Sarpy County and the other being near the city of Tecama. These areas have been defined as groundwater quality subareas in phase 2 under the updated management plan. Increased sampling in these areas will help further define the extent of high nitrates and determine if the issue is static or trending. This is the subarea for the Tecama area, and this is specifically focusing on the Dakota aquifer. Samples are collected yearly at the Tecama cluster, which is in near the cemetery in the city of in the town of Tecama. Additional sampling at the network wells will occur in 2021 within this subarea. And then this is the subarea for South Central Sarpy County. It focuses on the Platte aquifer. Samples are going to be collected yearly at the Springfield cluster, and additional sampling at the network wells will occur in 2019. Now we're going to focus on the cluster wells. We plan to increase the frequency of monitoring the cluster wells to fulfill the Department of Environmental Quality's request to update and maintain the well network, which is reported to the Nebraska Water Quality Monitoring Report. Every monitoring well cluster will be sampled at least every 2 years, and this will not only fulfill the request from the DEQ, but it will also improve sampling coverages in the wellhead protection areas. Lastly, we are proposing additional sampling to happen in the 2018 to 21 period. We will be collecting samples from contaminants of emerging concern at selected cluster wells. Previous discussions with the board have shown that there was an interest in expanding the suite of analytes to include contaminants from non-agricultural sources. We will collect samples to analyze additional contaminants covering pharmaceuticals, hormones, steroids, and other urban contaminants. The sampling will increase, we're going to be sampling for about 150 extra analytes. The results will be published in a scientific investigations report discussing anthropogenic impacts to the groundwater within the district. This is the budget broken down into state fiscal years. The project spans 5 fiscal years, but is actually only a total of 4 calendar years. The USGS will be contributing $108,700 under the Cooperative Matching Funds Program, and the district will contribute $582,800. These are links to some of the different project information, specifically the project website and links to the agrochemical clearinghouse, which provides the data to the monitoring report, and then also the baseline report for the groundwater quality within this district. So any questions you might have can be answered there, or I'd be happy to answer any questions you have as well, or any questions you have on this project.
Chair, I'd entertain a motion on this
item. I move staff recommendation.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Anybody in the public wish to speak on this? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson.
Thank you. You have that cost summary chart?
Yeah. Two more pages after that. One more. Is that you're looking at the green one there?
Yeah. There we go. How many people actually do the work here?
Well, we have a sampling crew that consists of 2 to 3 people, and then I manage the project and do the sample analysis and setup.
Right.
And then we send all the samples off to the lab.
And how often during the month or year do you go out? And so it was there. I apologize.
Samples.
I didn't. Huh?
We collect samples usually in from the June to August or September period. First week of May, we do NRO samples, and then we're out for, if you were to lump it all together, probably about 3 solid weeks.
3 weeks. All right. My question. You've got salaries, you got travel, you got vehicles, you got supplies. Going down the, you can't see the, well, fiscal year, I'm 18, the first one. You got all this stuff, and then you got the contingency factor. The heck is that?
Contingency factor is just in case somebody were to be pulled off the project, that contingency holds on to covering somebody at a higher grade to take over the project, or contingency.
How often does that happen?
Actually, I took over the project from somebody else actually a few years ago.
And then the leave factor is your annual leave? Must be. Vacation time?
Yeah.
And then further down, you got a cost center, $27,500. What the heck does that mean?
That's so that the office can run.
That's what?
Administration costs.
Then facilities, what are we paying for there? $5,600.
The facilities in the building. That's to help us.
It's a lab.
The use of the lab, when we use the lab to do analyzation on triazines.
And then the bureau, who's the bureau we're paying?
That would be the having access to people like, for instance, I'm sorry to just go into an example here, but that's the best way I can think of doing this. A few years back, there were questions on some of the results we were getting in the Venice Nest concerning metals and such. And so we had to pull in another person from higher above us that worked in the National Research Program to help us answer what was going on in the Venice Nest concerning uranium. And so that helps us, answer.
But do we need that? That's a question for Paul. It's rhetorical at this point. We're paying $11,200 a year, and it keeps going up for a bureau. And then augment total indirect costs, including SS. What's SS?
Science support, maybe.
We're paying significant money for an SS.
No,
what is
it's
it?
The same as the basis and indirect costs. So I'm not quite sure what SS means on that. But it's the same total as the basis and indirect.
So it's a double entry?
No.
No.
It's...
It's documenting the same thing that's right here. See.
Science support.
So I think it's like...
SS is science support.
It's just right down here so you can see the two added together, what they end up.
So it's not added up. It's,
no,
it's not double.
Oh, okay. That's I don't have my calculator, so. All right, so we were paying for a lot of overhead for a government facility.
Unfortunately, we are one of the government agencies that is not federally funded 100%. So
how much percent are you?
I would say maybe 20.
30.
You're part of the interior, right? They don't give you enough money?
For as long as I've worked at the USGS, we haven't ever been 100% federal.
All right. And then, going back to the original memo, previous agreement had us at 74.5%. Now it's 84.3%. What do you... You're decreasing 10%. We're increasing about 10%.
Our cooperative matching funding has been decreased in the new administration and through other cuts that the government has been making. So our matching funds...
Did your funding decrease? We're going to have to make up for it?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
You guys have been great cooperators with us since 1992 and other projects since before that, so I don't like it very much either. And I've battled to get it up.
But if you don't get these other projects, then what are you going to do?
If we don't get other projects, what are we going
to
do?
Hey, you're not going to come back to us for price increase, are you?
No.
No, they've got this set up for the 4-year period to cover everything. I mean,
yeah, but we've been paying 74% all this long. Now you're jacking it up to 84.3%.
Well, I guarantee you
because of their problem, because they don't have a good marketing department. I don't know what, but I don't see how that can be justified. That's all.
Director Bradley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wanted to know, when is the report for the anthropogenic due?
That would be the end of fiscal year 21, I don't have it right in front of me, but I want to say it would be coming in the middle of 2021 or the end of September 30th, 2021. That would be
my. I would hope that there'd be a series of that.
No, it's actually just one report, but the report is published as part of a series of reports. So anything that the USGS publishes that's a scientific analysis report goes under the title of a scientific investigation.
Okay. And the nitrate clusters, can we go back to that slide, please? We were showing some occurrences.
Actually, we have it. If you go down to the next, just those different cluster wells. These are the different cluster wells we have. No, go up.
But there was a high occurrence of nitrates in certain areas.
Right. There. Borrow this really quick. We sample the Springfield. Let's see. This green triangle. That's the Springfield cluster, and the. I'm sorry. Nope. We sampled this blue square and this blue square yearly because the nitrate contamination levels are elevated or above the maximum contaminant level in those areas.
Okay. And then because it was, part of that series of anthropogenic cause and effect, if that could be put out there for somebody like the University of Nebraska Medical Center School of Public Health, then can put on if there's cancer clusters over the high nitrate. See, that's what I'd like to see, that kind of data. And I know you're doing the geologic. You need the biologic when we vote on this groundwater management plan as a whole in the next month or two or couple of months. And this is just for more the rest of the directors, because we had somebody from the School of Health, and I don't know if they had, they didn't have their, you know, they weren't ready for that, that if they can come back. But what I'm trying to get at is just to look at that, put that together, and a good GIS person could put that together for all of us. And it is rather unfortunate, funding Department of Interior. I was a National Park Service Ranger, and the Department of Interior, we're looking at like $300 million cuts at just national parks, and then they passed that payment, some of that cost to the people that visit the parks. And the senior pass went from $10 to $70. So, and I understand your predicament where you came before us, and before, since 1992, we probably had a certain agreement. And now, you know, your portion really been drastically cut, and you're asking this board if we can somehow make it up and try to keep that agreement. I think we can maybe do the best we can, but we may have to look at trimming some of this, as Director Thompson was looking at. But I do understand your predicament. It's unfortunate, but overall, I like the project itself. So,
if we go down to the budget sheet real quick, I just wanted to point a couple things out in the comparison here. That I've been in the private consulting business before. In theory, if you were to take their $248,000 divided, which is their indirect cost, divided by the total, it's only about 35%. Private companies' numbers probably be between 1.6 and 1.8 of their actual staff time. So they actually have more overhead and cost for facilities and things like that than what is it even being accounted for in this contract. So just a note.
I've got a question. You in your remarks, you commented that the agency, or one of your agencies, somewhere in the government, wanted some additional data, and how much I would like you to explain how much of your desire for additional data is reflected in our increased percentage of cost. You're wanting data, but are you making us pay for it?
This is the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality is requesting the data to support their state legislative publication that they do every year.
Is it a want or is it a need?
It's at this point it's a need, isn't it?
Yeah, so staff is, our district staff has worked with DEQ to determine a way we can do this without jacking the budget up very much, which you see in the total there. What we've decided on is they want to know locations you're going to go back to time and time again. And they've even talked to other NRDs about, is that an annual, can you at least do that annual or biannually? So we're trying to reduce that cost by spreading that out to biannually, and we're just doing the wells that we know are permanently located in one place, and those are the wells we've actually put in for monitoring. So I feel we've kind of come to a happy medium there with what DEQ wants, and then as a byproduct we get additional data in our community's wellhead protection areas, because that's really why we installed those wells where we did.
Okay, thank you.
Just add it to the long list of unfunded mandates.
All right. Director Teaser, please.
Go back up to the map where you have the triangles. Just for my own clarification, when you get there. The triangle in the purple on the plat, is that the Venice?
The triangle in purple, that's Valley.
New well in Valley.
That's the new well that hasn't been or is going to be? Or
it's been installed and we've been able to collect. We're still establishing the baseline on the Valley.
Where is that located?
In the baseball fields, in the city park baseball fields, I believe.
Okay. And then going north on the Elkhorn, keep going up. Hill there.
This way?
I'm sorry. Maybe it's the next triangle to the up.
Yeah.
Way up. Right by the white. Oh, I'm sorry. There's another one.
That one there?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that one, but I didn't see the one that was right there. The green one that's in the purple and the blue.
That's Arlington.
Okay. And then going further north, closer to the Missouri.
That's Decatur.
Decatur. Thank you. Those...
Are you done, Rich?
Yes, thank you.
Director Bradley.
One more thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was on the Environmental Quality Council for 4 years, and we many times the NDEQ, sometimes the NDEQ will do the dirty work in the bidding. Certain people that may want to not see this type of information and data come out, so I want the board to be cognizant of that. My opinion of, you know, what might be going on, and when the NDEQ tacked on these extra requirements, what was the timing of that? You know, when you say
they discussed it, brought it up to a district, to all the districts, about a year, year and a couple months ago.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Fraser?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you. Well,
you can't.
Related to this?
I can talk, yeah.
Okay, the next item is a review and recommendation on the amendment to the Coal Creek Interlocal Agreement with the City of Omaha. Amanda Grant, please.
Good evening. For your consideration this evening is an amendment to the Interlocal with the City of Omaha. It's actually the fifth amendment that we've had, and I meant to include a map, and I didn't. But Coal Creek is a tributary to the Little Papillion Creeks, kind of the northeast part of the Papio watershed. Starts south of Sorenson, about 60th Street, and runs through, you know, a heavily urbanized watershed, ties in just south of Cass Street. And so the district's been working with the City of Omaha for a number of years, and Coal Creek has a history of flooding, including one flood-related death in the 90s. And so there's been a number of studies and work done. And starting in 2002, there's this formal interlocal to work together to buy out properties along Coal Creek and then improve some of the culverts that were causing some of the flooding issues, and then also do some cleanup channel type work. And so those four subsequent amendments really just extended that same program over a number of years with different, you know, not to exceed costs. And really the district's contribution, about $6.8 million has been spent to date on Coal Creek, and $2.6 million has come from the district. The City of Omaha really handles all of the contracting and the work and the designs and the plans, and the NRD's responsibility has mainly been that of a cost share. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit to the fourth amendment and talk about what was in that. That started in 2014, and I'll talk in NRD fiscal years. The city's is different. But in 2014 and 2015, we were going to do some buyouts on properties that are in the floodplain there, and then we were going to do hillside culvert repair or improvements to make that a bigger culvert to allow more water so it doesn't allow the backup flooding. That was going to be in 2017. Then we were going to take 2018 off and in 2019 resume buyouts. That's how we had Amendment 4 set up. We did those first 2 years of buyouts, 2014 and 15, bought a couple of houses. So to date, there's about 35 properties that have been bought out. And then there was some change in staff at the city, also some delays in funding, and they did not program in the hillside culvert improvements. So we knew we needed to come back and amend this interlocal Amendment 4 because they did not do hillside in 2017. But while we were discussing that with staff, we thought, okay, now might be a good time to just reassess what's going on in Coal Creek. We have new hydrology, new hydraulics, better information on terrain where we can pull, you know, first floor elevations of houses. And then the other thing is we really hadn't done a survey of the individuals that were interested in buyouts since 2002 or before, which was quite a while, and a lot of properties have changed hands and people are now interested that weren't. A lot of things contributing. So we said, okay, let's take a step back and do another assessment and see what what we really want to do and prioritize as we move this program forward. So now, and this is the interlocal amendment number 5 is what's in front of you tonight. And what we're proposing is that the district contribute half of the updated study cost. The city has hired CH2M to do that work. They've already done enough of the work to know that Hillside is still a problem and the culvert needs to be improved regardless of the new hydrology. So we did go ahead and include that. The city has programmed those costs into their CIP, their budgeting process. So, and then we said, okay, then we'll stop after that. And so there will eventually be an Amendment 6 if this is approved, where we would come back and say, now the study's done and this is what the priorities would be for buyouts moving forward or any other help. So tonight is up to 50,000. It's 50% of the actual cost that the city incurs. Up to 50,000 from the district for the updated flood study or flood analysis. It's more than just a flood study. It's analyzing first floors of all the houses along Coal Creek and if their properties in the floodplain and things. And then the year FY 2019 and 2020, we would budget half of the costs of the Hillside culvert improvement. So that's anticipated at over $1.4 million. So the district would contribute whatever their actual costs are up to $700,000 over those 2 years. So I'll answer any questions, but that's the recommendation, is to approve that fifth amendment to the interlocal.
Chair, I'd entertain a motion on this item.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none. Directors? Director Thompson.
You know what? I wish you would have included a map to help understand what the heck we're approving and where we're approving it. This goes from Blondo Street down to the south of Western, right? Kind of between Western and Dodge.
Yes.
This kind of reminds me of King Lake, where we bought out this house, that one, and that one. I need to know, and for the new directors, of the houses along Coal Creek that we're talking about, and it's, I don't know, a mile and a half.
You know, there's over 200. And
if there's a map available,
John, we have somebody from the audience that's trying to get our attention, sir.
Thank you. I grew up in that neighborhood along Coal Creek from Water to Western. The house is literally right up there.
Why don't you come up and use the microphone so we can get you on tape, please?
If you could
identify yourself.
My name is Sean Fennessy.
Address, please.
My address currently is 518 Ridgewood Avenue.
Okay.
Where I grew up right near Brookhill Pool, and every day we go down to the pool in the summer, we walk across Coal Creek on Hillside Drive. And the house is literally, back to some of the houses, where Mr. Winkler is sitting was where the creek. And it's still like that. And there are some houses that have been bought out. But those are, it's not safe. You get a nice flood in there, you're going to lose houses and you're going to lose lots. So I think it's a good idea.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
In a point of disclosure, Mr. Fantasy is a candidate for District Seat 4.
All right. As I was saying, thank you for the clarification. It's spotty, and the buyouts are voluntary. I would like, before I can endorse this, kind of how many houses have been bought out. I know the city wanted us to buy a house out that was not in the floodplain, and I still remember that, you know. And I'm not gonna forget it until I see the damn map that shows which houses are in the floodplain. And dear city of Omaha, don't try to sneak one in on us, because I don't appreciate it. Whatever deal that was, where the city ended up buying it out, they wanted us to pay half of it. And that was corruption at its best. And whether or not the buyouts do any good, because it's spotty, with one vacant lot here, the city lets the weeds grow up and don't cut it because they own the property, it's another story. But perhaps photos, number of items, number of houses that have been bought. The culvert thing, where's that, near Western Avenue or what? I'd like to.
Western has been completed.
I mean, that's significant, $700,000.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then on top of this, you want to study it again. Who did the original study?
Kirk and Michael.
And then, and you'd mentioned that we've got better hydraulics and all that. So is the study going to allow these people to sell their property any better? Or what do we get out of the $100,000 study?
Out of the study, what we what they're working towards is developing. So we have the flood study. That's the, you know, the updated flows through Coal Creek that FIRA had completed, and you know, we're working on with FEMA for the Big and Little Papio. So that includes Coal Creek. So we that information is already there. They're taking that information, and they listed. You know, we have this big spreadsheet, like flood elevation, and then on each side of the creek, you know, what the house elevation is. And they're prioritizing a lot of information for us, I guess, is, and the city.
All right. So what the new study could show is that maybe you don't have to buy out as many properties, or maybe there are culverts that maybe don't need rehab or do. So it'll give you a better idea of what the current conditions are with the new hydraulic.
Yeah, and I mean, quite honestly, the initial, you know, start of this study is showing that, well, because of the culvert improvements that have already been done and the reduced flows from the new hydrology show that there's not a lot of overbank flooding in Coal Creek. So what we're sorting out now is historically we know it comes out of the bank. We've seen it happen. So we're trying to, is that debris clogging culverts? They have historically problems with debris, people dumping, just limbs, you know, things like that. We're trying to figure out those types of things and match up historic flood with model flood.
And the creek is the boundary line for the property goes in the middle of the creek or the city owned the creek?
People owned.
No, people own the middle of the creek.
So access.
That presents another issue. Why are we helping people on their own private property if they got tree limbs dumped in the creek and so on? Lumps done. So I'm a little cautious about this, especially when you're talking, you know, a lot of money. And furthermore, once it gets to a potential buyout, with today's real estate prices, they're going through the damn roof. And if someone wanted to sell any of these houses, they're going to get top dollar for it. And what benefit does a city and NRD if that one house amongst the seven on the block becomes vacant? I've got real problems with that being, you know, the Thompson Creek down in the Vista, that's a different story. They all agreed to it because there was significant erosion of the bank and so on. This is not like that. So I'm sorry to see it come on the agenda again because I hope that dog didn't sleeping in the corner waiting for a flyaway gets up. And I don't know. I just have trouble supporting it.
Well, there's a couple of things on your point. You're asking, it's a voluntary program, and there's over 200 properties along the creek, and only 35 have been bought out, so it is spotty. It's spotty because it's voluntary, and it's what people have the money for, and so I can provide a map of the properties that have been purchased, but you're absolutely right, it's very spotty. And I think that's one reason why the city and NRD, at least at the staff level, have decided we don't really want to proceed with buyouts right now because we want to see if that's even still a priority. We've been kind of chugging away because it's historically been a problem, but we're looking at everything to just see what are the priorities. Maybe the priorities are different and it's not buyouts. Maybe it's debris cleanup or I don't know what. Yeah, we'll have some recommendations. When
Mr. Chairman?
Well, we can make that recommendation for you and just not approve it.
Yeah, yes.
Director Bradley.
Yes, and I know we have to be stewards of the tax dollars and so forth, but we spend a lot of money in other parts of the district, Sarpy County, so forth, and this, you know, it's not exactly, in my mind, inner city Omaha, but Coal Creek, part of it, you know, in my district and so forth, and those folks in that Coal Creek area. I want to approve this project myself, and like I said, if we, you know, spend even way more money than this, you know, this project in other parts of the greater Papio, Missouri NRD, you know, maybe we can just look to spend some here. Thank you.
Amanda, I've got a question for you. In regards to the $750,000 that you've got for our expenditure, and that means $1.5 million total expenditure, I believe. Is that They're 50-50, isn't it?
Yes.
What is the primary purpose of the expenditures? Buyouts or engineering or construction or what? What's the money going to be spent for?
So this actually, Amendment 4 did have buyouts included in 2019, and we've taken that out. So the total number of this has gone down since Amendment 4 by 200,000. The 50,000 is the study to provide us with some direction for priorities moving forward and analyzing the new flood data. And then the 700,000, the remaining, it's just split over 2 years. But what that would be to contribute 50% of the design and construction costs of the Hillside Drive culvert.
And that would include buyouts if necessary at Hillside Drive, then?
It does not include that. And they're not anticipating any buyouts for the culvert work. It's just to improve that culvert.
Just an engineering construction project.
And the culvert improvement will improve the flows through the area and help with the overtopping of the bank and the flooding as that culvert's improved. So if you improve the culvert, you improve the situation.
Right.
And that's what that study will demonstrate.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Rep. Louise.
Yeah. You know, when they did the work on it the first time, I don't know how long ago you were talking about that we did some buyouts and whatever, how many years ago that was. What was the conclusion they come up with to fix it that they thought was the fix when they spent the money versus now all of a sudden we're back there again? So how do we keep from spending all this money so this head doesn't keep coming up?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily like it's the same. It's just an extension of the same thing. So in 2002, we started improving culverts to help the flow get through there better and buying out properties that were at risk. And so we've never really veered off that course. We've just extended it. And that's really like the list of people that wanted to be bought out was way larger than we could handle. Mm-hmm. So since 2002 till now, we've really just been chipping away at the exact same thing.
Well, because the gentleman said it was a safety hazard. What would be the idea of maybe trying to redirect the water?
There's not a lot of places like that to like a detention or something. That would be great. There's just the houses' property lines go right to the middle of the creek, and there's not any open space. I mean, there's houses and property, commercial and you name it, all down that creek. So there just isn't anywhere to do that. The big.
What if you put a culvert in there and a pumping station covered it up? Just make it go away.
What, somewhere else? So I'm thinking you might, cause problems elsewhere, wherever you're.
See, that's why I'm not familiar with whether it's an area from here to there, or I'm not familiar with the distance. So I'm just asking if we could maybe somehow, if we're going to keep spending $1.5 million every so many years and buyouts of properties, bite the bullet and get everybody to the table and say, okay, this is probably going to cost a little more money, but it's a one-time thing. Let's fix it and make it go away.
You can't hide it.
Oh.
That's right.
You would need to go take a look here, because it's a huge problem. That, you know,
where exactly is this?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, I can show you.
Do you have an address?
You can go to 76.
Mm-hmm. I know that's it.
So it's South Sorensen. And it goes all the way.
Okay.
Ties in here.
Is that Dodge? Okay, so it runs back. Okay.
I mean, it's a pretty big tributary.
That is sizable.
There's a lot of small houses on very small lots, and they're just side to side, and they all back up on the creek, and there's no access to the creek. If you could get access to maintain. We don't have any right-of-way in there. It's virtually an impossibility for somebody like us to go in and even clean out the creek. And it's privately owned.
So that was the goal. There was a study that looked at all these culverts Basically, it came down to the bottom line thing. What we need to do with Cold Creek is clean it out and make it a creek. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get to the creek. You can't have people own into the middle and expect to maintain any three road. You got to clear it out. And that's why it's high. And then you can make greenway, trails, whatever, along that area. It's really the big plan. And it is exactly like this. They've done it. It's a little bit bigger. This is at 2 blocks. This is closer to a mile. But they have erosion problems just like the Vista. They've fallen in. That's one of their bigger problems now than flooding.
I would be more concerned with the safety aspect because I'd sure hate to have anybody get washed down that creek.
It's happened. That's what happened in 99. I got killed. You got washed down the creek.
Right.
And those are things. So that was the overall plan. It's kind of, we had special money to help with the buyout for a number of years. That went away.
Yeah.
You know, the city and the NRD have done some. And basically tried to do it on a cooperative basis, and that's why it's not about just who's willing to sell and how much money do we have. And we don't have enough money to buy everybody, but it's probably, that's why it's studied. Where do we want to change our focus? Do we want to change our focus from where we're at or not? And what do we want to do? But it's not just we're going to throw a few dollars here and there. It's a big deal. Maybe we need to look at some other funds. I mean, La Vista, they worked hard. Got 18. They got 319. We now have 319 plan approved. Maybe where we need to apply. But it's a big problem. It's been a big issue. Not just in Fiddlehead. I think there's a little loss in vision.
Thanks, Marlon. Any other questions or comments? Director Jeff.
I think you partially answered this. Is there a standing ongoing agreement to purchase homes from anybody who wants to sell in this area? So it's just if we have money, we buy them, or what's
the city of Omaha has really been the one in charge of that. There was an original list back, and Marlon mentioned there were some federal dollars originally as part of a federal grant for buyouts, much like we used at ISKE, and that has gone away. But when they did that, they collected all the voluntary, you know, who was interested all along Coal Creek. And then that list, they took that and they assessed a benefit cost ratio for each house and they set a priority. So the city has really been, you know, we're just going to use this list until we get this list done. And so if someone new who, you know, a new landowner, you know, someone else bought the house and now they are interested, they kind of go to the bottom of the list. We've already got all these people. So that's how we have been operating, and we were just thinking it's time to refresh.
How old are these?
They're pretty old. They're
60s, 50s. Built in the
60s? No, late 50s.
Be careful. Old is a subjective term. 50s,
60s.
Older.
Mature.
I guess, why are homeowners buying these? Why would, if there's such an issue with this creek here, why do people live there? I mean, why did they buy them in the first place?
Low-cost house.
I understand that.
And not every single house is in jeopardy, you know, of erosion and flooding, but many, many of them
mm-hmm.
are. You know, and I think that's exactly right. Low cost. A lot of the floodplain there, you know, maybe it's not right up to the house, but the whole backyard is in the floodplain. So maybe they don't have to pay flood insurance and they...
No, I understand. You know. Is there a little bit of a buyer beware thing going on here? You should have been aware that there's a creek that erodes. I mean, I've got property that has creeks and
it's hard to miss the money.
It is hard to miss.
And I haven't seen the NRD offering to buy anything of that. You know, that's my question. Why is it our responsibility to purchase these? I'm just asking a rhetorical question. Purchase these if they should have known when they bought it that there's a major issue here.
You know, and that's an opinion that anyone's entitled to. You know, we're helping to reduce flood risk, and I uh-huh. think we look at it that way, regardless.
But this piecemeal approach, I don't see how we're ever going to get anywhere unless you get a huge federal grant to buy all of it. like you said, almost turn it into a green space. You're going to have houses in this floodplain with issues for the next two generations or more. I mean, it's almost as if people shouldn't be allowed to buy a house there. But then that makes the value worth nothing.
All right. Mr. Winkler?
No. Jim.
Jim, go ahead.
Oh, again. You kind of brought it up, Ted, and I'm going to add on to the discussion. Today's Omaha City Council, they had a lot of people testifying on the Arbor Woods project. And the NRD was brought up on both sides of the argument. And John Winkler's name was mentioned at least 12 times. They said our staff engineers, is that you? Okay, so you're very familiar with the project. What it is, the old Sunset golf course is going away. And the developers, MP Dodge, wants to build a apartment complex, single-family homes, and there's 1,000 people against it because of this green space. And it's currently in the floodway, but the maps hope to reduce the floodway so the structures will not be in there. And then here we are discussing buying our houses that are in the floodway that, you know, would and they're small houses, population-wise, I don't know how many there are, but not nearly the number of folks down at Arbor Woods. So, but the NRD...
There's different development standards now.
Exactly. So we're applying either, you know, if we approve this, sure, we'll buy out little houses so no one's in danger. But on the other hand, and our role, by the way, in that is strictly... being a consultant, no, you can't hear the rules for floodway. We don't enforce the rules. The city zoning people do that. So we have little control over that.
Yeah.
We don't have any control over it, actually. So whatever happens with that, it's not the NRD saying yes or no, or we like it, we don't like it. Thank you for doing your engineering due diligence. But it's kind of ironic today. I mean, there's hours spent on that discussion that, let's not build it. Well, we can build it because, and let's not build. We need green spaces, even though they're going to hold 60% of the green space. I thought, well, maybe let's just change the levy and they can donate that land. It'll become permanent green space. Because what they're talking about, once they develop the Arbor Woods, there's still room to develop more closer to the creek. I hope that never happens.
Yeah.
And we better, you know, that's up to you guys to look at the rules and interpret accordingly. But it's kind of ironic that, you know, we're going to tear down some little tiny houses. But on the same token, this is what's happening in Omaha, not too far away, I guess. I don't know. It's a big patio. It's a little patio. So it's a different creek, not as much water, but same concept of saving green space, creating green space. And it makes for an interesting discussion.
We need to get you a bigger soapbox, Jim.
Just to clarify.
I was going to wait till Thursday, but we might not be.
There's nothing in there that says we're going to buy out any house.
Right.
All this is saying is we may actually, the board committed to spend the $700,000 to Omaha 3 years. So you've already committed to spend the $700,000 in the past group. This is just taken from 3 years ago and bringing it forward that it didn't get done. So that commitment's already been made. The only commitment you're making is we're going to study to say where are we going to 50 grand.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The commitment out of what fiscal year? I mean, we agreed to it. Was it bound by a fiscal year? I mean, is it...
There's no bound, but you agreed in interlocal agreement that you would pay $700,000 for the bill site.
Just wasn't spent.
We didn't spend it 3 years ago because it wasn't done.
Have we got an engineering contract on that now that we're going to see inflation?
The city has engineering contract.
Your max is 700 no matter what.
No matter what the inflation.
Okay, all thank right. you. Any other questions or comments?
I'm anxious to hear what I was quoted on that I didn't say today, right. City Council.
We'll call on motion, please.
Thompson?
Yes.
Labor Fowler?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. That concludes our agenda. Thank you. We are adjourned.